Well, hey everyone, and welcome back to the Dangerous Creatives podcast. I'm so excited that you keep coming back and tuning in and feeling encouraged by all of our awesome guests. Today we have Anami Tonkin with us, who is the host of the This Can't Be That Hard podcast and also the creator of the Simple Sales System in PickTime, if you're familiar with the automated sales app that's inside of the PickTime program. That people just are raving about. I'm so excited to have you here today, Anami, to talk about photography, pricing, your journey, all of the things. So thanks for giving us your time.
Oh gosh, thanks for taking my time. I'm so excited to be here and to get to like meet you. Finally, it feels like it's been a long time coming, but yeah, it's an honor to be here.
Yay. Well, can you give us a little bit more of a background story to you, how your career has evolved over the years and how you developed the Simple Sales System?
Sure. Oh, that's a pull up a chair. So my name is Anami Tonkin. I am a family photographer based in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. I got into business in 2010 and have just kind of been rolling with it since then. When I started, I was a sort of, you know, Jill of all trades photographer, like so many of us, I think, start. I was doing all kinds of stuff, but I kind of focused on families and weddings. I felt like, you know, I was trying to leave a career. I needed to make at least that much money in order to do so. And so, so I was just sort of aiming at what I perceived to be two of the higher, you know, higher end markets, like potential, bigger potentials for income. And I, you know, again, in a 13 or 14 year career span, there's plenty of stories to tell, but two main points. One was that, 6 or 7 years into my business, I, was busy enough, you know, thankfully to feel like my marketing message was just too split. Like I was trying to do too many things because I had these two very distinct audiences that I was trying to speak to. So at that point, I sort of looked at my, honestly, the decision didn't take that long. I was like, am I going to stick with weddings or am I going to stick with families? And for a multitude of reasons at that point, I decided to go only with families. I left weddings behind. And I get a lot of questions about that because I think that still people perceive weddings as the potentially more lucrative side of things. But even though there was a big component of that, that was like, I want to spend Saturdays with my family and my kids. And, you know, they've got soccer games and things on Saturdays. And I was a little resentful at that point of the fact that, you know, during the most beautiful seasons here in North Carolina, the spring and the fall, I felt like all my friends were like, we're going to go do this on Saturday or we're going to go camping this weekend or something. And I was like, meh, meh. I have to work again. Always, always. So, you know, those were two sort of lifestyle reasons, but it really did come down to a financial decision because when I was looking at my hour for hour numbers, as much money as you make with a wedding, because it's sort of like all in this one package, hour for hour, there was really no comparison. I was making a lot more money as a family photographer. So I just decided to kind of go all in on that. And that, you know, has served me really well. So that's sort of the one side. And then you asked about Simple Sales. It was kind of around the same time. It was about a year later that I got divorced. And I had a situation where all of a sudden I needed to make a lot, well, not a lot more money. I needed to make more money. I needed to increase my my income by about 50% because, of course, I was going down to a single income family. And I didn't really, the way that I was running my business was doing in-person sales and it was just super time consuming. So I'm going to like super fast forward the story and just say that I ultimately sort of reverse engineered what worked with in-person sales to create this more streamlined process. I ended up partnering with PickTime to kind of make that an automation within their system because I was using PickTime and it was, you know, it's so beautiful and the online gallery store is such an amazing place to make money. And so that combined with just sort of the overall system ended up meaning that I was able to continue on in my photography career and then actually add on education because I had so much additional space in my calendar, even though I was making actually more money the way that I was doing it now. So anyway, that's the not so short version of my story.
That's amazing and so encouraging because we do hear a lot of wedding photographers who are like, hey, am I ever going to quit doing weddings? It's really scary to think about giving up that income. Maybe the same client it doesn't transfer so well. So like what really goes into that switch and what have you seen be really successful for people if they're trying to pivot?
Yeah. I mean, the beautiful thing about going from weddings to family or like starting that process is that unless you happen to be serving like an exclusively destination wedding kind of a clientele where they come to you to get married and then they leave again. You know, here I am, I'm in Central North Carolina. Most of the people who are getting married here are then like having families here. And so I actually, as I was launching my business now, it wasn't a launch. I had already had a family business, but so many of my family clients were sort of fed in from weddings to the extent that one of the things that I was most worried about leaving the wedding industry for was like, well, where are all my leads going to come from? That ended up not being too much of a problem. But I would say that if you are, you know, if you haven't thus far taken on any or many family clients and you want to get into that from the wedding, from that direction, the first thing to do is to look back at your clients from anywhere from, you know, a year to 5 years past and say, okay, who has kids? Who can I reach out to? I am a big believer in email marketing. And so making that transition sort of transparent and talking about it on social media and in your email, I find to be one of the easiest ways to just kind of get the word out there. This is where I'm going. This is what I'm looking for. Asking for referrals, all those kinds of things. The other nice thing about coming from weddings and going into families is that you're not just looking at your couples as the source of potential, new business, kind of like when you're trying to market to weddings, the guests at a wedding, the bridal party at a wedding, like all of those can be really great grounds for a referral. So all those different things. And then I didn't make the switch instantly. It wasn't like I flipped a switch. There was the day when I took all my wedding work off my website, which felt like a big deal, but I just kept a page sort of on the hidden side. You know, for a couple of years, I still took weddings just because, you know, it was a hard chunk of change to say no to. And I figured I could manage a couple of weddings a year. And then after that, I was like, okay, I'm officially done. So at that point, I just started referring that work out all the time.
Oh my gosh. What does that feel like?
Well, it's been a while. To your point, it was a bit of a scary move. You're betting on yourself every time you make a big move in your business. But I find that when you know the time is right, not making the decision and not taking the action is actually more painful than taking the action, even if it's scary, because there's somewhere deep in your psyche that knows, like, you're treading water, if not actively swimming backward. Like, you are holding yourself back out of fear, really, because that's always, you know, when something inside you says, I want to move away from this and toward this for whatever reason, whether it's an artistic reason or a lifestyle reason or a financial reason, if you know that that's the right decision for you and you wait for it to get easier, oftentimes it just becomes more stressful. It's that thing you wake up, you know, thinking about in the middle of the night. So certainly I'm not perfect at this, but I try to, when that noise starts to get kind of loud in my brain, I sit down and make an action plan and then I just stick to it. Like I almost turn into like, I'm my boss and I'm the employee. And the boss is like, this is what we're doing. And the employee is like, all right, I'm on it.
Like, okay, Anami. Here's what we're going to do next. Step one.
I promise I don't sit and have conversations with myself like a total weirdo.
Feel you. I'm like, okay, I need to coach myself right here. All right, listen up. We have work to do. Let's figure this out. And I think you're so right that when you're in that moment of transition or you're in that moment of indecision in your brain, that's like the most painful part.
It is.
kind of being trapped in your own mind and not taking the action in the direction that you're wanting, even if it doesn't go exactly how you plan, it's still like taking the action feels better.
Yeah. I mean, it never goes exactly as planned. Yeah. but yeah, I mean, it's almost that space is almost the opposite of anticipation. You know, they talk about like anticipation is half the fun of going on a trip or whatever. That space of indecision and sort of stagnation is the worst part of just like tearing off the Band-Aid and moving into the new thing.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Can you explain to us the simple sales system just for people who aren't familiar with it, who don't know, haven't used PickTime or haven't heard of it? What is the simple sales system?
Sure. And I always like to preface it by saying the simple sales app in PickTime makes the process really easy to run. But when I started it, obviously there was no app. And I was just, I tell people all the time, you can use any gallery software with that has an online gallery store. You can actually sort of manually do the simple sales system. So basic concept is, again, that we are taking the sales psychology that is sort of baked into the old school, like, you know, standard in-person sales process. We're taking that and we're using modern technology to streamline the parts of it that don't require that you be in person. Now, there are certainly benefits, and I'm a big believer in IPS for the people that it works for. It worked well for me for several years. I didn't love doing it. I mean, it was one of those things where there's a lot of repetition. You have the same conversations a lot. You do the same sort of thing. And many of us who have done IPS or do IPS like love that feeling of watching someone see their photos for the first time. So this does mean that you don't necessarily get to do that. But the trade-off is that, you know, most of the way that I teach it and the way that I run simple sales in my own business, I make the same amount of money that I was making with in-person sales. And my clients still end up with prints and products at the end of our time together. But I'm not actually going and doing a sales session with them, and I'm not having to place the order. Like, so much of the back and forth is automated. So I always say step one, and it's really step one through all the way through the end. Step one is education, where because we're not going to be meeting with people over and over again in person, it is even more important that you get your educational ducks in a row, so that your client always knows exactly what's happening, what's next in the process. You know, there is no miscommunication about what's being delivered or being promised, any of that sort of thing, what they're paying for. So education the whole way through. And I talk a lot about using different forms of education. So, you know, obviously creating a PDF for someone is a kind of education, a contract is a kind of education. But there's so many other ways to educate. And especially these days, my favorite way is in, you know, via video. So just making a video that's not for a single client, it's for, you know, a group of clients. And maybe you have newborn clients who are different from your family clients, you need to give them slightly different instructions. So you'd make different videos for them versus your family clients versus your wedding clients. But still, you make that one video and you can send it to a whole bunch of people versus, you know, having to have a very similar conversation over and over and over again. And on the client side, I think that having sort of a choose your own adventure educational process can also be really appealing. I think many of us are used to, you know, anything from YouTube to TikTok to all the other different forms of video out there. So having that available on your schedule, sort of when you're ready to sit down and focus on something, I think can be helpful, as opposed to trying to say, oh, but we had a meeting or we had a phone call scheduled for this time, so that's when it has to happen. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. You're kind of swapping out maybe an extra phone call or an extra consultation for a video or for another little touch point in the journey.
Yeah. And depending on, you know, where you are on the sort of pricing spectrum and everything else, you can up the polish and the sort of production value of all of the different pieces and components of the simple sales system and really create what feels like a very high-end experience, even though it's not the high touch in the traditional sense version. So Second step in simple sales is just that we charge a session fee rather than an all-inclusive fee. That, you know, helps in both directions. Obviously, you always have to charge someone before you work with them some amount, because otherwise they won't show up, they won't take you seriously, all the different things. Mm-hmm. But rather than charging everything up front, by charging a session fee, you are both lowering the barrier to entry and you are making it so that part of your sales proposition is that, like, you know, I believe in the work that I am going to be producing for you. And therefore, you know, I'm only going to charge you for the time that it takes to do the session. Afterward, once you've seen your photos, then you can decide on what you want to do next. The third step is just to have the session itself. And simple sales, it works a little bit differently depending on if you are, you know, like a standard portrait photographer, or if you're doing something like brand photography. I mean, this is a longer conversation, but the session itself, and then when you go to deliver the photos, that's kind of where simple sales really kicks into high gear. So rather than saying, like, okay, let's schedule a meeting, which is what you would do for in-person sales, or rather than just dropping all their photos in a gallery and either saying, here's your photos for download, or like, here's your photos and there's an online gallery store, have at it. With simple sales, you are giving them a short-term preview. So they get a miniature preview. I teach that I recommend that is a slideshow set to music so that there's a bit of an experience to the whole thing. And then from that preview window, then they have the opportunity to purchase a collection. And collections can be tricky. This was the real part where, when I was trying to reverse engineer the in-person sales process, I was like, how do I get people to make decisions relatively quickly without me being there to say, okay, do you want to look at albums or do you want to look at wall galleries? You know, like, that process, that was the part that really took me a long time to kind of figure out. But what has worked really, really well is creating collections, but the collections are flexible. So rather than saying your collection includes an 8x8 album and a, you know, X number of prints or whatever, because always people are going to be like, well, what I really want is a 10x10 album, or like, actually, instead of an album, can we get, you know, that back and forth is the bottleneck that will derail any sales process. So the collections are just kind of an empty container. It is a certain amount of digital files and a certain amount of print credit. And that just kind of how you define that and how you price that depends on your business and your model. But the point is, they make that decision, and then once they've paid for that, then their gallery opens in full and they have a longer period of time to access the gallery, choose their downloads, spend their print credit, et cetera. So what PickTime has done is that they have created an app that automates everything from the delivery of the slideshow to then the end user can actually purchase their collection directly below the slideshow. And then as soon as they do purchase it, it opens their gallery and the timing of the gallery is set and the downloads and the permissions are all set. So that part is super convenient and helpful. But if you kind of think through what I just described, again, whether you use PickTime or a different gallery solution, you can set that up. You just have to kind of go in and manually send them an invoice and then go in and adjust the gallery based on what they purchase.
Right. That totally makes sense. I feel like there's a couple elements of psychology. You mentioned like pricing and sales psychology that go into why you designed it this way. And I'm guessing, so you mentioned education, mm-hmm. guessing the time constraint makes a difference.
Big time.
And then is there anything else, or you want to dive into those a little bit more?
Yeah, no, I could talk sales psychology all day long.
I love it too.
Yeah, there are definitely a handful of pieces of sort of sales psychology that go into it. Number one definitely is that guidance piece. Like, people need to feel confident at all times when they are making a decision that they understand what's going on. So really being thoughtful about not only what you're educating them on, but how you're educating it and when, like, what the timing of that education is. So again, using multiple sort of channels of education, because you're going to have some people who will watch a video and some people who will read a contract all the way through. Not many though.
Yeah. And some people that don't. And then they're like, what do you mean I don't get all the files? Right.
Exactly.
That's everyone's fear.
Exactly. So the most important things, the things that are like, if you don't understand this, it's going to cause a problem. Those points, I always say you have to communicate those in multiple ways. And the number one thing that I do and recommend that people do is before they actually book with someone, that they get on the phone with them. I get a lot of pushback about that, but that phone call for 15 minutes, answering questions, making sure that you kind of can hear it in their voice that like, yep, they do understand what's happening correctly, can be just a huge, you know, saver of time and anxiety and all those other things. So I do, there's one step other than the session itself that I stick to as sort of an old school manual meeting. But yeah, so the guidance piece is big, the timing piece is big, and it's not just saying you only have a short period of time to see your slideshow and then you have, you know, a longer period of time. It's all the way through. I think that people need deadlines. People need to know, like, this is when this is happening, because if they don't, they will just put it to the bottom of the list, like we all do that. And so I definitely teach sort of the setting the pacing. And I think that we all hesitate to do things like say, you only have this much time, you only, you know, have this many choices. But we do our clients a huge service by narrowing those things down. One of the reasons that we use collections instead of saying like, pick out your things, part of it's a time issue, but part of it is also reducing the number of decisions that are in front of our clients at a given time. You know, there's tons of studies out there, but you don't need a study. Like, you turn on Netflix at night and spend 30 minutes scrolling and trying to figure out which movie you want to watch. And then you're like, you know what, never mind, I'm going to go to bed. I'm tired, and I'm tired of trying to decide. It is an exhausting process. And as far as, you know, my clients are concerned, like, they've got little kids, they've got stuff going on. They need somebody to say, I'm an expert. Here's, you know, do you want to spend this, this, or this? How much do you love your photos? How many photos are you willing to say goodbye to? And then that just becomes a pretty easy decision. So, you know, time limits, number of choices at a given time, giving people sort of that experience of the slideshow and a little bit of a like, hey, take a moment, sit down on the couch, watch this thing, as opposed to like, I'm at the grocery store and I'm just going to flip through this gallery and like, meh, meh. Yeah. It kind of loses its luster. So all of those things definitely go into creating an experience that your clients are not only, you know, happy about their photos and happy with what they have hanging on their walls, but they also feel like they really were cared for throughout the process.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. No, I know decision fatigue can be one of the biggest reasons people don't book. I mean, I know you do more portraits and I do more weddings, but when I'm helping someone like book more weddings, I'm like, decision fatigue in your sales process is going to be one of the biggest killers of you booking what you want to book. So I love that you mentioned that and you're just talking about, hey, let's make it simple for people and give those boundaries so people feel safe inside the boundaries.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that setting boundaries does, not only does it protect you and your business, but I love the fact that you raised safety, because when we go to work with a business, especially if we're going to spend a lot of money, we want to see evidence that they have a process that they believe in. So when I talk to photographers who are very loosey-goosey with their, you know, well, they were looking for only digital files, and so I just made a package for them. It's like, oh, okay, well, first of all, you just totally gave that position of power to them, and hopefully they will be a good steward of that power. But also, it is what you have said to them is, I mean, it's not like you say this in some sort of bad way, but there is this sort of unsaid reality there that is like, I'm not 100% confident in the way that I want people to go through my process. And whereas that might book you work in the short term, it can kind of prevent you from booking work with the people who look at you as their guide, who are ultimately going to be the people that you have the best working relationship with.
Yeah, totally agree. Are there any other elements of sales psychology that you feel like are really helpful in this process or that have really helped you as you design this program?
Yeah, well, I mean, when you get into the pricing piece of it and the way that the collections are structured, you know, I know that sort of traditional collection theory is, you know, you present three collections and the middle one is going to be the most popular. And I sort of pride myself in this particular process where the way that I set Simple Sales up is that no matter which of your collections someone chooses, your session will be profitable. So this, the session fee plus whichever collection they purchase, total your minimum or more. And so even if someone chooses your smallest collection, you're good, you're whole, it's all good. That said, we all like to make more money, right? So the higher tiers and the way that I sort of stagger the value is disproportionate to the way that I stagger the money in terms of what is included versus what you pay. And so in my business and in most of my students' businesses, that top collection is the one that is typically purchased. So obviously you plan for the minimum and then you aspire to the maximum. And once Simple Sales is kind of set up and running, I always see it as the goal to constantly be evolving how you are encouraging people to spend more, either on their like outspending their the amount of money that they are given as part of their package to spend in the store, or just in terms of like funneling people toward that top collection. So, you know, all kinds of opportunities for just additional touch points and messaging and the way that you talk about products and show products and all that sort of thing.
I love that. I love that. Well, I wanted to also spend some time thinking about what is staying and what is going in your life and your business, since we are kind of like transitioning from one year to another year. But I thought it might be fun, since we're both photography podcasters, to not just talk about your business, but just photography as a whole. What trends do we think need to stay? What mindsets need to go? What are some of the things that like, you're like, this one I'm loving, this one not so much?
Oh man. Well, I don't know that this is new, but I am on a like lifelong mission to make sure that photographers take full stock of both their finances and sort of the time that they put into, you know, the way that they compensate themselves for their time. And I know you are too. So that's one that I want to see more people getting rid of, this mentality of like, I'm an artist, not a business person. That would be the first thing on my chopping block.
Love it. Love it. Agree.
What about you? Where are you going in this next year? Where do you see the trends trending?
I love the trend of building in more experiential pieces into things, like more in-person thing, especially for education, or just more like incorporating travel, incorporating things that I love. So kind of building this like memory around what I'm doing. So I love that trend of kind of like, let's make it a whole experience. I love, you know, when I travel, I love a food tour. I love a like workshop. I want to learn how to make croissants, you know? So I think I love that thing that is trending. So I want to keep that one.
I love that too. It's funny that you say food tours, because that's like a running joke with my husband where he's like, I suppose we're going to go on a food tour when we get there. I'm like, yep, it's already booked. No, I totally get that. And I would love to see more of that being incorporated into not just like, oh, I'm carving out this big piece of, you know, chunk of time because I'm traveling to go on a food tour or whatever, but also to kind of become those explorers in our own spaces. And I think that that's something that is just kind of a perennial good thing to remind ourselves of, especially as creatives, because it can be so easy to get into a rut, or just, you know, well, we're going to do the same location for the, you know, or I'm going to kind of set up a shot the same way. I feel like pushing our own boundaries kind of starts with looking around at the space that we're in all the time, and trying to see that in, you know, actual and metaphorical new light.
Yeah, I love that. I love the thought of being kind of like a traveler and explorer in your hometown too, and finding inspiration everywhere. Are you a fan of artist dates? Are you an artist way person?
Oh yeah. Yeah, totally. They are definitely, such a, it feels like such a decadent thing these days. I have 2 teenagers and like 3 dogs, and the idea of just having that space always seems like just out of reach, but every yeah. once in a while I get that opportunity and it is lovely.
What is something you want to stay? Because I think you did one that you want to see go, which is the mindset around, oh, what I love what I do. So it's okay if I make negative money on this shoot or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Film shooter. I like, there were a few years a while ago where I feel like everyone in our community was like losing money on what they were shooting. I'm like, guys, we can't do this anymore.
I know. And it was cool that film is trending among our audience. We have to make them pay for it too. Yeah. Let's see what I want to see stay. I really feel like it, the collaboration that I see in the photography community has come such a long way, especially since when I know you and I have been in business similar amounts of time, like that has come such a long way. And I want to see more and more of that. I mean, it's so trite to say community over competition, but truly just saying like there is almost an inexhaustible amount of work out there. And by boosting one another and by celebrating one another's wins, we really do ultimately like that does come around. And I know that that is an easier said than done thing. I mean, even like I absolutely fall into that trap. But to be mindful of that. And I think that people are, and I feel like they're calling themselves out a little bit more these days on that. So here's hoping that continues in the new year.
I agree. That's one I definitely want to see stay too. Have you seen the Blake Lively picture going around of her and Taylor Swift, where she talks about Beyonce and Taylor aligning instead of dividing?
No, I need to see that. That's amazing.
I'll send it to you. It's very cute. And at the bottom, she's like, don't worry, guys. I know you're intimidated by my pop stardom, but like there's enough room for all of us. And I was like, that's cute. So I totally agree. Like when you can find, that little ping of envy is so natural and it's human nature. But when we find ways to collaborate with people instead of be like, oh, well, they can have that, but I can't, or they're a threat to me, I think it brings so much more like peace to your own life. Mm-hmm. And also there's all these ways that abundance flows through opening up to collaboration like that. So totally agree with you. Love it.
One of the things too, I feel like in that realm that is helpful for me to remind myself of is when I'm feeling jealous of where someone else is, chances are typically it's because we're looking at someone who's a little further down the road than us, right? They've been around for longer, or they just have like whatever, you know, whatever they're doing, they have moved. And so chances are quite good that that person does not feel the same amount of competition with us, because they are turning and looking at the person who's in front of them on the road and feeling that little ping of jealousy. So sometimes when I think like, oh, we're not enemies, this isn't a matter of like, you know, we're all trying to kind of take the next step or get to the next milestone on our journey. That person just happens to be a step ahead of me. Like that to me, it drains sort of the frustration or the competition out of it.
That's so good. That's so good. Anything else that you maybe even personally, something that you tried this last year that you want to let go of going into 2024?
Oh, my mantra for this next year is not new, better. Like I feel like I tend to plant too many seeds and then it looks great when all the plants are babies. And then as they get bigger, everything feels really crowded. So I'm doing some pruning and then just some like TLC on what, you know, the best pieces of what I've got. So that's my goal. We'll see if I get there.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's always fun to have other photo podcasters on, and love the work that you're doing. So thank you for your time and the way that you encourage the photo community. And We're going to get to switch soon. So I'm excited to be on your podcast.
I know. I was going to say this is going to be a fun little do-si-do in our podcast worlds. But yeah, I really appreciate you you having me on, and I'm looking forward to making this a more regular thing.
Yeah. Well, is there anything that you are working on right now that you want to point people to? Anything that you're excited about that someone might want to connect with you on?
Sure. Well, I am actually getting ready to release a new limited series podcast. So my regular podcast is called This Can't Be That Hard. And then I've got this sort of mini series that I'm putting together specifically on the Simple Sales System. So it is going to be called The Simple Sales System, and it should be dropping right around the beginning of the year. So if you're listening to this around that time and what I was describing with Simple Sales is of interest to you, you can go deep dive a lot deeper, and that'll just be on all the regular podcast channels.
So amazing. Well, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon. Guys, thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of the Dangerous Creatives Podcast. We're so thankful that we can deliver this awesome content to you each week, and we're so thankful for your support and that you keep showing up to listen. If you want to dive in a bit more, we have our membership that is open year-round. We just launched a couple challenges inside of it, the Money Mindset Challenge and the Vision Challenge, and those are things you can walk through at your own pace. They're super fun and easy to get through, and also really inspiring if you're trying to make moves in your business. We have a monthly call as part of that membership too. So you get to join for a year, have community, jump in with a bunch of creatives, and also walk through the curriculum together. So if you want more information on that, you can check out that and all of our other offerings at dangerschool.com. Thanks so much, and we'll see you soon. This episode was produced and edited by the lovely Jen Madigan Creative. Music for this episode was written and recorded by Chammy D. Thanks for being part of our Dangerous Creatives podcast community, and we'll see you again next time.